Timeless Voyager Radio. Self-development radio for the open mind. Interviews with leading-edge authors and speakers, psychic phenomena and the unexplained, UFOs, extraterrestrial encounters, government cover-ups, alternative health care, new technologies. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, Timeless Voyager Radio. With me today, my guest, Dr. Frank E. Stranges. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Good. You have a wealth of information that I know our listeners will be interested in, but I think the most important piece of information that I'd like to start with is you have had contact since 1957 with an quote-unquote extraterrestrial.
Let me correct that. The first initial contact took place in December in Washington, D.C. of 1959. However, his photographs came into my possession several years earlier.
This gentleman's name, Valiant Thor.
That's right.
All right. Now, I have a quote here. In mid-March 1957, while working at the Pentagon, and this is incidentally a statement by Dr. Harley Byrd. He is the nephew of the great explorer, Admiral Richard E. Byrd. And he says, and I quote, "In mid-March 1957, while working at the Pentagon, we received an urgent message from the Alexandria Police Department. The message indicated that two of their on-duty police officers had picked up an alien who had landed some 14 miles south of the Pentagon, and the occupant was transported to the Pentagon to meet with President Eisenhower and Vice President Nixon. This alien is the one described by Dr. Frank Stranges in his book, Stranger at the Pentagon." All right.
Yes.
So that's where we start.
Great.
All right, it's hard enough for people to believe in UFOs. I don't know who they think are driving these things. But anyway, we're talking about an extraterrestrial. We're talking about, but a humanoid. Is that the right term?
Yes, that would be a correct terminology.
So this is someone that looks very much like us.
That's correct. All right. Have you seen his picture?
Yes.
All right.
I don't know about our listeners, but let's start this way. You came in contact with him. Did you first hear the story? Was this something that you heard first and then later came in contact with him? How did this begin?
The scene is actually Irvington, New Jersey, several years prior to the actual meeting. My telephone rang, and the individual calling me was August C. Roberts, a former Air Force photographer, old-time friend of mine. And he had been supplying me with photographs of UFOs that had been sent to him from all parts of the world, including some pictures that he personally took.
So the UFO thing was going on in your life?
Oh, yes, since 1945, actually. Right. So he called me and he stated that he had in his possession photographs that he had personally taken of an individual who claimed that he was not from this planet. Now, up to that point, my UFO research and investigation was strictly on a scientific level, without going into any ridiculous direction, because at that time I found out the philosophy that I hold to this day, that once you have a truth, you hang on to that truth, because in this type of research and investigation, the most difficult task is to separate between fact and fiction, and God knows how much fiction there is in this field of endeavor and of investigation.
All right, so for our listeners, and certainly for me, what was the truth that you were holding on to?
The truth that I was holding on to at that time was that there were unidentified flying objects, that the government of the United States was, in fact, engaging in an active conspiracy to withhold, by force if necessary, information from the American public regarding the reality of unidentified flying objects. And up to that point, I was lecturing in churches, colleges, universities, presenting facts, figures, names, dates, and places about, in quotes, unidentified flying objects. And now comes my best friend with pictures from a person from another world. I was highly skeptical at first, and I ridiculed him a bit over the phone by asking him, Augie, what have you been smoking lately? And he doesn't smoke. And he was irate with me for a few moments. Then I said, look, Augie, please forgive me. Can you come over? Can you bring the pictures? He said, of course, I'll be over in a couple of hours, which he was.
All right, now, for those of you who may have just tuned in, this is Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio, and my guest today, Dr. Frank E. Stranges. He is, incidentally, the president of the National Investigations Committee on Unidentified Flying Objects, and also a minister. All right, let's go ahead. I didn't mean to stop the ball from rolling there, but I like people to know who we're talking to and what we're talking about. So he's on his way over. August is over to your house.
August Roberts came over to my home, presented me with about 9 photographs of this individual and of groups where this individual was photographed. And this all took place in Highbridge, New Jersey, at the home of Howard Menger, who personally was involved in UFO research himself.
All right, so this particular gentleman, Valiant Thor.
Yes. No one knew his name at that time.
All right, but whoever he was at that moment, he's still the same person now.
Oh, yes.
Allows pictures of him to be taken. He's not at all afraid that people know who he is or what he is or where he's from.
Correct.
That's interesting because we've all been led to believe that these people from other planets, other galaxies, keep a very low profile. And this is not a very low profile at this point, is it?
Not at this point. In fact, it's a rather high profile. Look, where he allows himself to venture from the Pentagon, of all places, to a little UFO research group in Highbridge, New Jersey, miles away, and he's supposed to be on the security guard at the Pentagon. No one knew that he was gone, which we found out this information later. And here, while he's waiting to receive the answer from the President of the United States to his offer for the sake of the human race on this planet, he's over in Highbridge having his picture taken.
Now, did he actually meet with President Eisenhower?
Oh, yes, he did.
So President Eisenhower met with him. Now, do you know whether President Eisenhower believed he was from another planet or not?
The only thing I can say to you is the testimony I've received from former Secret Service agents who were present at the time and several members of the then Joint Chiefs of Staff who said there was a very unusual visitor at the Pentagon, at the White House, rather, who claimed to have come from another planet. And this was so serious that it appeared in one particular page of the recently released CIA documents that have been declassified under the Freedom of Information Act, that there was an interesting individual. Oh, yes.
This is, as far as the information is concerned, while the information itself is not recent, it has just recently been released.
True.
All right.
That's true. And now, you see, the plot is thickening because we have one person representing himself to be a stranger from another planet, Venus to be exact, and we have the testimony, signed sworn testimony of highway patrolmen who were instrumental in turning Valiant Thor over to the Capitol Police and the CIA and the FBI. They all got involved. You see, now, bear in mind, not just Mr. Nixon, but Mr. Eisenhower, but several other people at the Pentagon at that time in high-ranking official positions in the government also had knowledge of his presence at the Pentagon.
This is not fiction.
Oh, no. I should say not. There's evidence.
Right. People would like this to be fiction.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
But you know, I'll tell you, Bruce, there are perhaps millions of people who are praying that this is fact, too.
Well, of course. Matter of fact, I would say that almost anyone in the UFO community is probably tired of giving a certain amount of their heart to the belief that this exists and then have someone say, no, I'm sorry, the whole thing is a joke, it doesn't
exist. That's right.
And
that's
continuing
right.
up and down. People involved in the UFO community, I think, are probably some of the most skeptical people who have finally flip-flopped and decided, yes, after much of their investigation, that this is definitely true, but they have no way to prove it.
That's right. Many years ago, I studied law. I got a law degree also. And I have had to use and apply the rules of jurisprudence along with the rules of criminal investigation to UFO investigation in an effort to get to the truth. But once you have the truth, you cannot let it go.
Why the government secrecy, in your opinion?
I must quote the Air Force by stating their position that the reason for governmental secrecy is because of the fear of mass hysteria. These are the words that were given to me directly from the mouth of General John Wiedemeyer at the Pentagon before he threw me out. And he started quoting the 1938 Orson Welles scare, which I told him is ridiculous because people are not panicking anymore. The only time people, the last panic we had in the United States that I know of is when Johnny Carson told the people it's going to be a shortage of toilet tissue. And the following 3 days, the shelves were cleaned of all kinds of toilet tissue. That was real mass hysteria.
So are we looking at a control factor? Is that what we're looking at? Is the government sure that if this information were to get out, that the ability to control the population would be seriously
compromised, to say the least.
Yeah, compromised.
To say the least. Yes, let me back up a few years when the government was giving out information to various media, not only using the line, if I may use that word, of mass hysteria, but also they would have to admit for the first time, the government of the United States would have to admit to the people of the United States that the Air Force has no defense against UFOs from the air, the United States Navy has no defense against UFOs from the sea, and the Army has no defense against UFOs from the ground. And they're not about to admit that.
Well, I'm sure that anyone who has any sense at all would probably figure that we couldn't do anything about them anyway.
That's true. If they were going to do us harm, they certainly would have launched an attack against this planet literally aeons ago.
So once again, we come back to our own government's control factor.
Yes. Not only the government, but also the world of the clergy.
Now, of course, I like this. Now, let's go with the clergy in a second. But I like to always take a moment when I say government and remind the listeners that we really are not talking about the government. We're talking about an elite part of the government, a very small group. Because if it were the quote-unquote government, it would be very easy to get this thing leaked and finally find out who knew what. But because it's such an elite group, we have some of the most high officials unable to get clearance enough to find out.
Barry Goldwater couldn't get enough clearance to learn the truth about this, and I sat in his home in Scottsdale many years ago, and he calls Lieutenant Colonel at that time, Lawrence Tacker, U.S. Air Force Office of Intelligence, in charge of a UFO information, and he was told on an open telephone that he did not have sufficient clearance to learn the truth about Valiant Thor, and he just about filled that air in his room with blue smoke that you wouldn't believe the language that he used.
So here he was. He at that time he was a senator?
A senator and the general, Air Force, not retired, Air Force Reserve.
So if you can't get clearance at that point, you would wonder who could get clearance.
That's right. There is an elite group, you're absolutely correct, and it's within the structure of the Central Intelligence Agency, and it started when the OSS dissolved into the CIA during the Truman administration. And one of the prime functions of the formation of the CIA was to investigate UFOs.
So that was their first and primary...
Absolutely, absolutely.
That was their reason for being created?
Yes.
All right, you brought up the clergy. The clergy of all people, why would they want to keep it quiet?
Fear. Fear. This is the reason why many of them, they absolutely forbid their people to read anything else except what I consider the Sacred Cow 1611 King James Version of the Bible. And I tell my people in our church and in our seminaries and in our branches.
Great. Let's stop for a second. Let's have you explain to the listeners your background as far as the clergy is concerned so they can see that at least you've got that credibility also behind you.
Yes. I graduated from North Central Bible College, an Assembly of God school in Minneapolis, Minnesota in 1950. And we founded and built our first church in Northeast Minneapolis at that time. And before that, I attended several years at Eastern Bible College in Green Lane, Pennsylvania, and I found that I was rooted and grounded in the Aramaic and the Greek and the Hebrew interpretation of the Scriptures, which in many cases tell a far different story than the King James Version.
All right, so now you have a law degree, you have a doctorate in
theology,
and
one in criminology.
And one in criminology. So as far as investigation is concerned, you sound like you've got most of those areas covered.
I think I've served my apprenticeship in those areas.
So when you say the clergy has a stake in this cover-up?
Fear.
All right, let's hear it now. Why? Again, is this a control factor?
It's a very, very important control factor. When I lectured at a space and science symposium in Mainz, West Germany, the Roman Catholic Church, at the instruction of the Pope, sent a Monsignor to visit with me and to request that I have an audience with the Pope the next time that I was in Europe, which I agreed to. And I said, why? They said, the Pope, His Holiness, would like to ask you two things. One, your information about UFOs, and secondly, about this so-called spaceman Valiant Thor. I said, why? They said, for goodness sake, you have got to convince him that he must first present his credentials in Rome before speaking to any group in the United States or any other country.
So now just implied in that statement is the belief that Valiant Thor existed.
That's right. That's right. If they didn't have the slightest inkling that this was real, they wouldn't bother sending an emissary to visit with me. And you have the majority, and I underline that in red, the majority of Christian denominations in the United States, they're fearful of UFOs, and they categorize anyone who even investigates UFOs as being a special agent of Lucifer. And this is absolutely ridiculous, because they do not know that the original scriptures talk about people coming from the skies. They talk about angelic beings, angelic visitors, and in every single case, these angelic visitors look like men.
All right, so when we use the term extraterrestrial, this, I guess, comes out of the Western scientific mind,
right?
Now, and you use the word angelic, which was many, many times used in the Bible.
That's right.
Visitors came. We mentioned them as visitors.
Mm-hmm.
This angel of the Lord came and visited so and so.
Yes.
And did this, and this. Took them here. Took them there. Interesting story with Lot.
Yes.
Lot was told certain things by a visitor from the Lord.
Get out of town, because there's going to be a hot time in the old town tonight.
Right.
And he was dressed in white. And he strongly advised them to put on white raiment and flee from the cities and not look back. And according to some scientific centers, they say that his wife, Lot's wife, turned around and she became the first victim of radiation.
A pillar of salt.
That's right. The exact same words that were used in reporting the explosion of the atomic bomb to President Truman. The victims looked like they were turned into a pillar of salt. Word-for-word report.
The Bible, evidently, and even if we talk about King James at this moment, seems to be, according to this information, a very detailed summary of many, many, many UFO extraterrestrial-type incidents.
Since the beginning of recorded history, yes.
So the problem, then, is that people in religion prefer the term angel of the Lord as opposed to the term extraterrestrial.
Or messenger.
So now, if we accept them as being angels of the Lord, is an extraterrestrial certainly in that category, or do you think that
there are
higher or lower type beings in the extraterrestrial?
I believe there are beings higher than angels. You see, we have a tendency as clergy people to condemn the whole of the universe simply because the human race on the planet Earth dropped the ball many thousands of years ago. We have no right, we have no license to condemn as sinners or any other of those type of words, condemning the rest of the universe. Why is it not possible for races of individuals to occupy other planets out there who don't even know the meaning of the word sin or transgression against God because they have never taken that step over the line?
Now, of course, the Urantia book basically says that we are incarcerated. This part of the galaxy is incarcerated from the rest, just because of the fact that we overstepped our bounds with the during the Lucifer Rebellion.
Dr. Wernher von Braun, before he passed away, was questioned by a member of our committee in Houston. And they asked him, "Sir, what is your opinion of life on this planet as opposed to other planets?" And he stroked his chin slowly, and he said, "It is my opinion that man would have to be an egotistical fool to think he's the only intelligent being in the universe." He said, "Furthermore, it is my humble thesis that the planet Earth is the insane asylum of the universe." I hope he's wrong.
Well, are they really unidentified at this point? After all, if you've had this ongoing friendship with Valiant Thor, his vehicle is not identified as far as you're concerned, is it?
It's identified.
That's what I'm saying. It's identified. It's not unidentified.
No. But there's still a small percentage, according to the Air Force, 7.7%, that are totally unidentifiable. They don't know what they are, where they're from. They're too far away for an honest scientific evaluation. They come and go as a flash of lightning, just like Ezekiel said, and they're able to execute impossible right-angle turns, violating every known laws of aerodynamics, unidentifiable. Once they land and identify themselves, now they're identified as a craft from another planet. But it's unfair to say every UFO is a visitor from another planet. That's not correct.
Now, you have written and certainly spent a great deal of time studying other possible explanations for these craft that people have seen. Why don't you give us a few examples?
Number one, figments of the imagination.
Well, of course, that's...
people in Los Angeles, I don't know about the people in your country, in your city, but people in L.A., we have a certain segment. They swear to the high heavens. They see UFOs every day at high noon. If you stand on the corner of Hollywood and Vine, there it is, and they'll swear that they're seeing it. Figments of the imagination. Some psychiatrists have gone on record, especially those who have been retained by the Air Force, to question eyewitnesses, especially if there have been military or civilian pilots or commercial pilots. They give them a very, very strong recommendation that what they saw was actually in their mind. And if they say anything different, their jobs are in jeopardy. And that's a low blow. That's a very low blow, because you're speaking to experienced million-mile pilots who are in a position to know at least pretty accurately the behavior of that object, which would be invaluable to any honest research. Then we have other categories. There are some that have been manufactured at the end of the Second War. Adolf Hitler instituted quite a bit of research on ufology. He believed in the principle of aerodynamics as far as the discus was concerned. And he encouraged, in fact, he financed scientific research into flying saucers. And he told them, go ahead and perfect this thing. And as soon as it's ready, it'll turn the tide of the Allies against themselves rather than at us. We will turn the tide of the war, and we will win. Well, those scientists, they did build prototypes. I have pictures of them, and I might show them when we get together again. They did perfect flying saucers. These are those that are being sighted today, 1992, in certain areas in South America.
So they're being used?
Oh, yes. For what, we don't know. But they have not achieved supersonic speed, but they give off huge puffs of black smoke in the sky. They almost look like antiques, and they're very, very noisy. But these are those that have landed and terrified many people throughout South America.
Just because they're round?
Yes. They seemingly have no means of propulsion. There are no wings, no tail, but they make a lot of noise. Whatever propels them is on the inside of the structure. And then the other possibilities, not just Germany, But England and the United States both have been, Canada and the United States both entered into a pact with the Avrocar, A-V-R-O-C-A-R Corporation in Toronto, Canada. And they came up with a saucer, but they couldn't get it to fly too successfully. And they're still trying to this day. And the United States, believe it or not, the Department of the Air Force, every once in a while, they come out with an amazing-looking vehicle that resembles a flying saucer or a flying cigar-shaped vehicle. You see? Look at our own B-2 and some of the other stealth bombers that we know nothing about yet. They have been experimenting with these in different points throughout the United States, and people have often mistaken them as vehicles from another planet. They, in reality, to us, are UFOs. They're unidentified.
All right, so the point of this discussion at this moment has been to say, yes, there are times when people see something that is not intergalactic.
Correct.
So we're going to accept that. What is so hard, then, with the possibility of intergalactic spacecraft?
In my travelings through universities and colleges, including the one last week, the overwhelming majority of the crowd believe that UFOs are interplanetary in origin. They want to believe. They want to believe there is some intelligent being out there who might be able to come here and render certain assistance to the human race. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, certainly the human race could use some assistance.
That's true. That's true. Again, picking on the clergy, very few pastors in this country actually take care of their people. They don't feed their sheep the way the Scripture says that they should. Now, God says, I'm going to send my angels to minister to you who are the heirs of salvation, the human race. So he sends his ministering angels and his guardian angels. And the angelic host is doing the job of what the clergy is supposed to be doing and are not doing.
We have talked just a little bit about an ongoing friendship that you have had with a quote-unquote extraterrestrial. And before we talk more about this particular gentleman, and matter of fact, his brother and their friend, what is the UN's position on the UFO question?
It was my pleasure to receive an invitation from Dr. Abdul Ghana, who was the head of the Outer Space Affairs Committee at the United Nations some years ago, and I delivered my message, almost the same things I'm telling you today, and showed them slides, show them pictures and illustrations, show them sworn sign affidavits and testimony from individuals to lend some credibility to what I was saying. And to my great amazement, the overwhelming minority of the member nations, members of the Outer Space Affairs Committee, were even interested to pursue this from an official point of view. However, several of them, excluding the United States, said it would be good if we form some kind of a committee ourselves to launch an unbiased investigation into the possibility that we are not alone in the universe. Well, that was many years ago, and to this date, the United Nations has not done one blessed thing to promote those words.
So the United Nations started out with the idea that it was a great thing to do, and then that was it?
That was it. And they
have, what is your opinion?
My opinion is that somebody, either the United, I would prefer to see the United Nations do this, but some organization who is well enough financed to make a dent in this thing, that is non-political, not affected by any religious group or government group, an independent group of honest individuals should gather together, be properly financed, and go out there and launch an honest investigation, call in actual witnesses, even in the congressional hearings that have taken place. Witnesses were not called in, only individuals who have been studying UFOs, not actual eyewitness accounts, have been made part of the public record. This is wrong. How can you present a valid case in court unless you have the privilege of questioning witnesses, cross-examining witnesses to get to the very meat of the mystery? Impossible.
I think it was Bill Cooper who said that there was an investigation financed by a group out of the United Kingdom to prove or disprove that the Normandy invasion actually occurred.
Interesting.
And believe it or not, after they spent well over $1 million, mm-hmm. they were unable to prove that the Normandy invasion occurred.
Can you beat that?
And the point is very well taken. The point is that we choose to believe that there are not UFOs at this point.
That's
when
true.
I say we, I'm talking about the public in general.
Yes.
And because there's certainly as much testimony saying that there are UFOs, there may be more testimony, as a matter of fact, from what I understand, than there is testimony that says there aren't UFOs.
That's
so
true.
It's just our choice, isn't it?
That's true. Some years ago, the Condon Committee at the University of Colorado, Dr. Edward Condon was paid by the United States Air Force to head up an official investigation into UFOs. First, they spent $313,000, and later on they received an additional grant. And in all the time, they spent about 18 months with thousands and thousands of pages. It was worse than the Warren Commission as far as an accumulation of material. They never called one single witness who laid claim to even seeing a UFO. Not one single witness who laid claim to meeting a person from another world. And he calls the press conference the very first day, Dr. Condon, and he said, "Well, I don't really believe there's anything to this, but we'll give it our best shot," end quote. That's quite a way to start an honest investigation.
All right. How is this phenomenon then going to affect us? Let's look at four possibilities, okay, in religion. All right, if what you are saying is true and begins to become the standard mode of thinking, what will happen to religion?
As a result of information I have personally received from Commander Thor and other people of his group, I have found a deeper, richer understanding of the scriptures than I have ever enjoyed before.
So there's no reason for the clergy to be afraid?
None whatsoever.
This is the fear
None
of
whatsoever.
Fear itself, isn't it?
That's right.
Commander Thor.
Right.
All right. How would it affect science?
It'll affect science because they're going to have to rewrite their textbooks.
Again?
Yes.
How close is quantum physics to, quote, the truth, so to speak, in your opinion?
I put a lot of credibility in quantum physics.
So they're close, quantum
yes.
mechanics. All right.
Very much so.
So you feel that science in general is going to be rewriting a lot?
Yes.
How about an example? Just maybe one.
Well, the Einsteinian theory formula of E equals mc squared, there have been many indications that the formula itself, the equation itself, is incomplete. And if he were here today, he would probably complete that equation and prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that we can travel faster than light. Years ago, when Mr. Ford finally came out with the automobile, the Model T, he was cautioned by science and religionists that they're going against the will of God by building a car. And the scientists jumped on board and they said, if you go faster than 24 miles an hour, oxygen will escape from the driver's mouth and you'll have a corpse behind the wheel. Well, they should see some of the boys traveling our freeways today.
Now they must be the ones that went faster
probably
than 24.
the speed of sound was a fictitious barrier.
Okay.
And it was broken. The speed of light, 186,000 miles per second, give or take a few, will also prove to be a fictitious barrier.
So the point here is that science is going to be rewritten very, very quickly.
It should be rewritten very quickly as soon as they receive the information to rewrite it.
How would this affect the economy of the Earth? Would it affect the economy?
This is one fear that the Pentagon has voiced in closed session, that if a man from space could come here and attempt to give President Eisenhower that which we offered him, which was how the human race could get along without sickness, disease, and even death. That in and of itself, according to those in Mr. Eisenhower's generation, claim that it would then have ruined the economy of the nation. Imagine now, if you could show people how to get along without sickness, without disease. They say you'd have to close most of the hospitals in the nation. Many of the doctors and surgeons and specialists would have to find other employment, you see, and the drug trust would take the gas pipe. When I was a special investigator for the Kefauver Commission, this I'm going to throw in for good measure, we proved conclusively that to produce a shot of penicillin at that time, which was way back in the mid-50s, would cost 4.7 cents. Now, with our new improved methods, that 4.7 cents to produce a shot of penicillin will probably go down to about a half a cent or less. And what do you pay when you get a shot at the doctor's office today of penicillin? $25 minimum. So the drug trust would be in a lot of trouble.
So there would be a problem with the economy, certainly in the beginning.
Yes. Now, I'm inclined to believe that if a person can come from another planet and show me how to get along without sickness, disease, and death, they can also show us how to save the economy. Because the economy of the nation today is so uncertain at best that even if the president sneezes, the stock market suffers the following day. This is ridiculous.
Let's devote the rest of the show to Valiant Thor. How did you feel when you met a real extraterrestrial?
Before I had the privilege of meeting him face to face, I was highly skeptical. I even entertained the thought that the Air Force was behind this to trick me. But when I met him face to face and looked into his face, and he shook my hand, called me by my first name, told me things about my own life that I never knew about myself. I had to check with my parents and grandparents to verify the validity of his comments. My faith grew immediately.
He had no fingerprints, did he?
No. None whatsoever.
So why do we have fingerprints?
I asked him that question. In fact, I held his hand for the longest time examining his fingertips, which were bald as a peeled egg. And he said, fingerprints are a mark of the fall of man in the garden. He pointed his finger at me. He said, you as a former special investigator, you should remember the days you spent in class studying the science of fingerprinting, the whorls and the loops and all that. He said, every man on this planet is marked.
That comes from Genesis with the story of Cain, right?
That's right.
So Cain was marked and so are we.
That's right.
So other planetary beings that are humanoid are not marked.
They're not marked. They're not condemned. They're not living under any curse of the law as we are, according to the scriptures, which we have an opportunity to get out from the curse of the law by accepting that which is right.
What does, where does Valiant Thor come from?
My question to him, where are you from? He said, I'm from the planet your Bible calls the morning and the evening star. I said, Venus? He said, exactly. The inside of the planet Venus. The surface temperature in excess of 980 degrees Fahrenheit.
I've always said, if you were going to build a house, where would you live, inside or outside? All right. He lives inside the planet.
Yes.
I mean, he's not the only one.
Oh, no. He said there's a vast society in Venus. There are people living in several planets within our system and many planets outside of our system. He said the universe is literally alive with life as we know it. And they're not gruesome creatures either. They're all humanoid. And why not? Because if God created Adam in his likeness, in his image, why should he depart from that in creating life on other planets?
What is the position of your friendship at this point?
We have a very fantastic ongoing relationship. He's appointed me as the chairman of the Council of Twelve. And there are 12 people that get together twice a year. We just had a meeting on December 26th, 27th, 28th, and 29th on board his craft, which is up at Lake Mead. And we'll meet there again 4 days in June. My relationship with him has been nothing but fantastic. When my father met him for the first time, he looked at him in utter disbelief because he saw his picture in my book, and then to meet him personally, and they spoke with each other in the Italian tongue, which my dad, before he passed on, both he and Mom came from Italy, and they had a marvelous conversation. And he spoke with people, friends of mine from other foreign countries, too, in their particular language, because these people can speak every known language and dialect on the face of the earth. And what bothers me is this, that our government had an opportunity to glean from him certain information that would make this a better world, and they elected not to do so. And now this opportunity is perhaps being passed down through you and through me so we can pass certain information to the people for the betterment of mankind on this planet. And I see nothing wrong with that. Providing it doesn't violate anything that Christ taught, I'm in favor of it.
Have you ever seen a violation?
No. Never.
Let's talk about Jesus. Where is Jesus then in this spectrum of information we're getting?
I must believe with all my heart that which I've been taught since childhood, that even in the words of Valiant Thorpe, I asked him, what do you think of Jesus Christ? And he recited practically word for word the teachings of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that God became man. So he in every way could be tried, tested, and suffer the very things that are troubling mankind today. So no wonder Isaiah, many thousands of years even before the birth of Christ, said that this person will come and he'll be acquainted with grief. And certainly he was, to be betrayed by his best friends. That's grief in and of itself. And then to be crucified for doing good. Mm-hmm. And if you examine the legal part of that entire trial before Pilate, that was as illegal as the word illegal itself.
Certainly was very much like some of the trials we've seen here in the States.
It's commonly known as kangaroo courts.
You see Valiant Thor often. You're also in communication with him through what, a telepathic type of communication?
Not as much telepathic as telephone.
So he uses the phone?
Oh, yes.
So these phone calls could be traced?
Easily.
traced to a ship?
My phone has been tapped by experts.
Sorry. Well, you know, just like my listeners that are sitting here, sitting in their homes, listening to the show,
yes,
in their cars, and they're saying, well, you know, how far can you go with this? I don't want to ever seem like I have an agenda. If I have any agenda at all, it's to bring out information that we don't normally hear.
Right.
But I, like everyone else, would remain skeptical. And of course, I guess it was the Christ who said, you know, to Thomas of all people, weren't you very fortunate to be able to touch my body? There will be many who will never have touched it and will have to use faith.
That's right.
I think the point here is that we come to a point in our lives where we say, okay, I believe that there are UFOs. Why? What is the purpose? What is this about? What is this about?
I believe that 1992 is going to produce the answers to many of those questions, because as you look at society today, read your paper, watch your TV, listen to your radio, the news programs, this planet is reeling like a drunken man. We are in trouble economically, scientifically, politically, especially politically. This planet is in trouble. People do not trust people anymore, and this is bad. But if someone could come forth with a philosophy that'll help bring people together and cement their feelings and have one common goal, and that is to perhaps, even if it hurts us, if it strains us to do so, try to obey the golden rule. The very thing, the same thing that the principal teachers of our world philosophies have said, the same thing that Christ said, do unto others as you like them to do to you. Speak about others as you'd like them to speak about you. The golden rule, it's so simple. Do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. By following that philosophy of Christ, this world could enter into a unity that has not existed on this planet for a long time. And if space people could prompt us and push us, if I can use that expression, in the right direction, so man could trust each other again, so mothers and dads and children could sit down and have that warm fellowship they used to have years ago, not allow the idiot box to rob them of something that has been so precious all these years, you see. And today the family is divided. I believe in the unity, the unit of the family should exist today. And if space entities, space beings could promote such philosophies and show us where we've missed a boat back there, I said we would make a mistake by not listening to them.
So you look at these, these are encounters of the third kind.
Fourth and fifth kind.
All right. The way that you look at this is that these are not just aliens that are out to do X and Y and take over the planet and do all these other things.
No way.
But rather, in a way, service workers for the same God that all of us either believe in or choose not to believe in, but certainly they're service workers.
That's right. And we would be remiss in our own conscience if we in any way, shape, manner, or form would ascribe any worship to these people, as so many UFO groups have already done. They've made masters of these individuals to supersede Christ, and that I'm totally opposed to.
So you believe that? That's, of course, one of the big mistakes that's always made.
Exactly.
Because Jesus said, I am a teacher first, and then, of course,
that's right.
As time went on, people made him into other things. The way that you describe Valiant Thor is very similar to the way that people would think of as the Son of God. You know, we don't know whether Jesus had fingerprints or not, but Valiant Thor can read minds. He sees into the future. He can heal the sick. Evidently, these are not specialties of just the Son of God.
Oh, no. In a little city out not too far from Solvang, where I lectured at a church some years ago, it's where I first met Terry, a retired colonel came forward during the question and answer, during the intermission, showed his ID, and he said, I know your man, I know your friend. I met him once, and only once, and tears started coming down his face. He said, I was a jet pilot, I was grounded. And the surgeon grounded me because of stomach ulcers. And I passed your friend in the hallway at the Pentagon, and he stopped and walked back to where I was standing with another gentleman, and he put his hand on my head. He looked up at the ceiling, whispered a few words, and I felt a healing sensation from the top of my head to the soles of my feet. And he said, the following day I went back to the surgeon, and he said, there's something wrong here. We've got to take some more x-rays. And he took the x-rays. He said, you look like a different person. There's not one trace of ulcers. He said, there must have been something wrong with the machinery a few days ago. So this colonel, with his wife standing in this public place, stating the fact that he was healed by a stranger at the Pentagon, this to me was very, very ironic indeed. Very meaningful, to say the least.
What is it that Valiant Thor wants us all to know?
I think basically he wants us to know ourselves. He wants us to trust God, yes, but trust yourself too, to have a better image of yourself, and to know that you within yourself are a good person, and you have it within yourself to share that goodness and mercy to everyone around you.
Well, we've certainly heard that over and over again, and you know, truth keeps coming up, doesn't it?
Yes.
I want to thank you for being on the show today, Dr. Stranges. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
And I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in to Timeless Voyager Radio. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, and I hope that your own personal voyage through life towards the development of your highest potential is a joyous and successful one.